Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to another edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Another special one, another good one. We're recording this immediately after night two of Wrestle Kingdom 16. The big New Japan show is done. At least the first two nights, right? Completely out of the way. We're done. But before we move on with our lives, for us to go to work, depending on where you are in the world, or, for instance, myself, hit the sack, we're going to talk about it. We're going to break it down. We're going to give you our recap and review of the show. Myself, Mr. Warren Hayes, once again joined by Lord Mags himself. How you doing, Magsy? Welcome back.
What a difference a day makes. 24 little hours. Wow. That was amazing. I want to watch it again.
Well, hey, let's cut the stream and go do that. No. But how fantastic. Look, I mean, a complete difference. You're absolutely right. A complete 100% turnaround from what we got yesterday. We talked about it on our review, which you guys can go check later if you want, which is absolutely possible. But you know, you said it. You know, you were sort of ambivalent on it. You know, I think I was a little harder on the show than you were, but I think we both agreed that it was not New Japan putting its best foot forward, right?
Yeah, you were tired and a little bit cranky.
Excuse me. What?
But I didn't think it was Wrestle Kingdom quality matches. That it mm-hmm. felt, as we both said, like Raw 2 matches. But there were some gems in there. Whereas you come fast forward 24 hours and this was pretty much all gems and then one kind of fly in the ointment. But we'll get there.
Oh, well, sure. And we already know which one we're talking about. And we got gems and then we got I don't know. Super gems. What, like, what's better than a gem? A super gem?
A super duper gem.
A super duper gem. There we go. Look, we're going to talk about it, but right now I want to thank everyone for joining us live here on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, which is where I usually record all of my podcast stuff, so I appreciate that. If you're watching right now, whether live or on demand, a like, a thumbs up. That's fantastic. And if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast application, muchas gracias, merci beaucoup. Thank you very much. And show some love there with a review, a like, a subscribe, a follow, whatever it is you can do. And I hope you have a good time listening to Mags and I talk about the show. Because we can't keep Mags here too long because he's got like 17 other podcasts that he has to go record, right? Busy, right, Mags? You're a busy guy.
The podcast slander is... This is your fault, Warren. We covered slander? This.
I'm not slandering you.
This is entirely your fault. You were one of the pivotal people in getting me into podcasting, so I blame you.
I take no responsibility for your excesses, sir. You made your choices. You made your bed. Now sleep in it. I'm talking about sleeping beds.
I can't because I'm too busy making podcasts.
Good point. Touché. We'll talk about the pre-show just a little bit. Like I don't want to spend too much time on the pre-show matches because I think there's a lot more interesting stuff to talk about. We got three pre-show matches, which in and about themselves were a lot better than the actual like opening matches on the main card of night one.
They were fun to watch.
They really were, like on different levels, but they were all very enjoyable. We had the New Japan Dads match, Gedo, Jado, and Bad Luck Fale, although I'm not sure I'm ready to call Bad Luck Fale a New Japan Dad because I'm just terrified he's going to come for me if I do. taking on Toki Makabe, Hanma, and Yuji Nagata. That was a fine match. Then we got Tenkozy and Master Wato defeating actually the Suzuki Gun combination of Taka Michinoku, El Desperado, and Kanemaru. This one is actually the pre-show match. I feel like had some type of newsworthy element to it, mm-hmm. because Master Wato got the win for his team by pinning the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, El Desperado Mags.
Yep, the champion who took Takahashi to the limit yesterday. Uh-huh. So that's a huge, huge victory for Wato. Someone who's since coming back from an excursion has kind of struggled, I think, to find his place. He's needed to lean on the New Japan dads, especially Tenzan, more than ever. But this may be the breakout that he needs. He looked phenomenal in this match. Really, really entertaining. And I can't wait to see a Wato versus Desperado run. I think that's going to be great fun to watch.
I already think, like, just the fact that he's dropped a lot of the goofy gimmick, right? Mm-hmm. Never mind the blue hair anymore and all that jazz. I think it made him a lot more confident, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like he knows better who he is as an in-ring persona than he did when he was the grandmaster and was doing this shit, you know. And
I mean, he still does that.
Well, he still does it, but
ridiculous.
But not as goofily, you know. Like, he used to do it in a way where he'd knock his, like, as if he was tucking his chin in from taking a pile driver, right? And he'd do that, and like it wasn't a good look. But I feel like I think he still has some work. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to start off the year and you want to continue to build Desperado as a fighting champion, you give him a nice little defense against Wato and give Wato the opportunities to grow, right? It's only if you grow as a wrestler if you wrestle wrestlers, right?
Yeah. You can only get better if you face better opponents.
You know, which is a basic tenet, you know, and I haven't spoken to a wrestler who hasn't told me that. Well, maybe outside TJP, but that's a whole other story. Not that I've spoken to TJP, by the way. This is a significant development from the pre-show. Clearly, Master Wato was going to be the next to challenge El Desperado, and then the third one we had another faction war here. LIJ, the LIJ combination of Shingo Takagi, Hiromu Takahashi, and Bushi defeated the Dangerous Techers and Dookie from Suzuki Gun. I thought this was fun too. I thought this was very enjoyable. A lot of teases in this match.
Yes. Very much. I mean, the tease of a Hiromu versus Zack Sabre Jr. Mm-hmm. run, that feels interesting. The revisit of the Shingo and Tachi stuff. Can't say I'm not happy about that. Yeah, this was all these kind of prelim matches really set the stage for what we could see in the coming months for New Japan. And yeah, I'm all about that.
I'm really all for a Hiromu Zack Sabre Jr. fight, yes. Feud, program, whatever you want to call it, because you know Zack Sabre Jr. doesn't stand for bullshit, right? Mm-hmm. He has no time for it,
and Hiromu is all about the bullshit,
and Hiromu just thrives in it. And I say, but we say that. We say that knowing that Zack Sabre Jr. has a fantastic sense of humor. So, you know, he knows how to play off of that. It's not like he's this disgruntled sourpuss. Like, it's, you know, it's part of his persona to just be like, you know, if you jump off, I'm going to move out of the way kind of thing. You know, it's like when Hiromu was doing the finger lock teases, and then at some point he's like, yeah, you know what? No, screw you. And he was all over it. Fun little prelim matches. It was a good little pre-show. I want to say hello to Thomas Gorries, who's joining us in the chat. Nice to see you, Thomas.
Hello, sir.
Then we get to the main card, where we had the IWGP Junior tag team, junior heavyweight tag team titles, successfully defended by champions Flying Tiger, Robbie Eagles, and Tiger Mask against the Mega Coaches, Taguchi, and Rocky Romero, and Bullet Club's Cutest, El Fantasmo, and Taiji Shimori. Eagles, that's early on, does this great dive to avoid El Fantasmo coming at him, and he dives to the outside like he's on a turnbuckle, and El Fantasmo's coming for him. So Eagles dives to the outside right onto the Mega Coaches, which was unexpected because the camera wasn't like well positioned for it. But you just see Eagles sort of like whoop, dive to the outside of the ring. You're like, what the fuck are you doing, man? You know, but that was really, really good. Then he, the Bullet Club's Cutest, of course, you know, they take control, slow things down with their notoriously vicious back rakes.
Oh, the back rake party. Woohoo.
Exactly. ELP does his rope walk, and Robbie Eagles comes in to break it apart by doing a springboard run. Robbie Eagles, man. Absolutely fantastic, right?
He's had a breakout year. I mean, we've always known how good he is technically, but he has really broke out this year to be a genuine star.
Tiger Mask does a Tiger Bomb and Tiger Drivers, Taiji Shimori. The Bullet Club do the UFO. And Ishimori dives to the outside. Just fantastic stuff all around. Now we get the resolution of a long-standing a mystery about this alleged loaded boot of El Fantasmo, right?
It's not alleged anymore.
Hang
sir.
On a second.
It is
wait
not
a sec-
alleged.
Get just a second here, sir. So the babyfaces all decide to team up and pin El Fantasmo down to finally take his boot off. The boot that, because his super kicks are so potent, because he goes and kicks giant pines in the Canadian wilderness. We all know this. This is well documented, right?
Do we?
Yeah, well, he says so, and El Fantasmo's a Canadian hero, right? El Fantasmo, Bret Hart. Okay. They take the boots off, and then suddenly, Robbie Eagles pulls out like a piece of metal from it, hands it to the referee, and the referee sort of examines it and makes the judgment call of expelling, disqualifying El Fantasmo and Ishimori based on this. Here's the thing. Robbie Eagles, fantastic guy. Great, you know, absolutely. But I don't know what his motivations here were. I think he could easily have slipped it into the boot as he was taking it. You know, I would like to re-examine the footage, to be frank. Because his hand sort of went really quickly into the boot once removed. I'm not convinced.
So you think he did some sleight of hand? He had that. Mm-hmm. He had that essentially folded up piece of tinfoil, and he tucked into his ring gear to slide it into the
boot. What are you talking about? That was a tinfoil, like folded over multiple times. No, sir.
That was. It was lead.
It was absolutely lead.
Oh, but that was a brilliant way to kind of put that fun story to bed. And the way Fantasmo was shocked that they found it, they were, wow, where has this metal come from?
Well, exactly. And wouldn't that just add on to the fact that, you know, Fantasmo's like, what was that doing there? This was not in my boot. Mm-hmm. Look at all these cops planting evidence.
And then we get the Young Lions essentially carrying him to the back, dragging him, kicking
his feet. It was
pretty
funny.
It was brilliant.
It was,
but yeah, that referee needs to be admonished. He doesn't have the authority to change the rules.
No.
Who does he think he is? Earl Hebner?
right? And we all know how that turns out, right?
Yeah, exactly. Selling knockoff t-shirts.
I'm telling you, man, there's a conspiracy with wrestling referees and high level Canadian athletes. I'll tell you that much anyway. Rob Eagles gets the win on Rocky Romero. He has him submit. Fun. It was a fun one. I very, very in and out. Didn't overstay its welcome. Touches of comedy because y'all had, you know, you had Taguchi in here, Rocky, El Fantasmo. It was fun.
Yeah, and compare and contrasted to yesterday's main event, this set the stage for a good show. Yesterday's was, it was kind of slow and dour. This did everything it needed to do. Like I said, it didn't outstay its welcome. It was fast paced. We got a comedy. We got some great wrestling. We got the good guys winning, and we've still got the continuation of the road to 69, which is going to be fun to watch.
Next, we had the Stardom tag team match, which was really exciting to finally get to see on the card, and second from the bottom on top of that. So that's really cool too. We had the tag team of Saya Kamitani and Tam Nakano defeating Stardom icon Mayu Iwatani and the Starlight Kid. The Starlight Kid and Saya go at it first. Mayu comes in for some double teaming. And from what I understand here in this match, just by the way, because I'm slowly getting myself more and more versed in Stardom, watching more and more. These were all people, well, like I know Saya and Tam, just at the Queendom event last week, they fought each other. They had a war with each other. One of my favorite matches of the night. And Mayu and Starlight Kid are in different factions, and Starlight Kid is actually she's a heel these days. You know, the as they like to say, a little shit right now. So they sort of put all the storylines aside, you feel, for this one. It really was an exhibition of four fantastic talent from Stardom. There was this great moment where Tam ducks a lariat to do a crab crawl to take down
the Matrix walk.
Exactly.
That was gorgeous.
That was really, really good. Mayu hits a crucifix bomb as well. Asai moonsault by Starlight Kid on top of that. Fun spot here where Starlight Kid climbs onto Mayu's shoulders while Mayu is up on the second turnbuckle and she dives off of that. So that was just way too high, but still fantastic. Yeah. It was great. Tam crossbodies off the top rope as well to the floor. Saya hits a nice Northern Light suplex. Starlight Kid kicks out of a schoolboy suplex as well. Lots of near falls as well. We get a tiger suplex by Tam, who can't hold on to Mayu as she tries to bridge, but she can't quite do it. Star Crusher by Saya, followed by the Phoenix Splash on Starlight Kid for the win. We got Saya getting the big Wrestle Kingdom Tokyo Dome pin here. That's a nice show of confidence. What did you think of the match?
I thought it was glorious. Absolutely glorious. As someone who is very new to Stardom, very, very new, this was mind-blowing. Seeing women wrestling done right. There was no kind of... there's no comparison compared to what we get in Western wrestling. It's as simple and clear as that. What we get with AEW and what we get with WWE, this blows it totally out of the water. Mm-hmm. It was fast-paced. It was full of action. It was full of death-defying moves. It was glorious, absolutely glorious. I will definitely be watching a lot more Stardom from now on. This was a brilliant showcase of what Stardom brings to the show. And I really loved the fact that Kevin and Chris on commentary really put over Stardom.
They really did.
Saying how it's become the second biggest promotion in Japan, that it's catching up with New Japan in terms of fans and in terms of attendance. Yeah, I'm hooked. After this one match, I'm hooked.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely fantastic. Just some great stuff with four of their top talent as well. But the pace of this match, I think, was really what is really the big point of it. It's just, but all stardom matches are like that. It's wild to me. Yeah,
I have been missing out.
It's really wild to me. And you know, the comparisons with what we get like in Western wrestling, North American, European wrestling, what we're exposed to typically, of course, is night and day. You know, the stardom ladies, they start training very young to begin with, mm-hmm. right? So that, and they retire. Most of them retire very young as well because the pace is so crazy, so demanding on their bodies. And they, man, they wrestle like 70, 80 matches a year. So the pace catches up with you really, really quickly. It's something completely different than what we're used to getting here. Absolutely. And it's, that's what makes it so remarkable, I think, to us tuning in and discovering what Joshi can offer. It's just mind blowing at some points.
If your only exposure to women wrestling is from WWE, is from AEW, from the Western organizations, this will leave you slack-jawed.
Yeah,
just absolutely. how talented these ladies are. It's genuinely mind blowing.
I'm biting my tongue on a couple of things because I don't want to get. No, look, I'll, look. Hey, you know what? I'll just say this. You know, you watch some of this, and then you wonder. You watch some of this, and then you're like, look, you know, I you don't understand why people are like are so high on people like Liv Morgan, for instance. You know, no, but look. See, this is the thing, right?
your hatred for Liv Morgan.
No. I do not. Oh, no. I do not hate Liv Morgan. I think she has some. I think she's been poorly used by WWE, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But I also think that she has some other issues. But I think she has a unique connection with the audience that WWE is not using properly. All right. Yeah. You know, sometimes we get confused. Like, it's what the in-ring is and what the persona is. And I think when people flip the fuck out when they see Liv Morgan doing a springboard a sunset bomb, like she did on Monday, Day One, where I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool. Like, because clearly she's trying stuff out and she's improving, and that's fantastic. But like, it's not going to blow my mind and be like, wow, she's like the next coming of Minami Toyota kind of thing.
Yeah. Because, and especially when you watch a match like this and that kind of moves is standard.
Oh, it absolutely does. It cannot but not.
Yeah.
We got Anakin JMT who's in the chat. Nice to see you, Anakin. Also left a super chat. Thank you very much. Oh. He asks me, he says, Warren, what do the World Tag League trophies look like? They look like weird sex toys.
Well, I think they're meant to be like mochi mochi muscles, aren't they?
They look like weird sex toys.
Well, I am not one to king shame, sir.
Neither. No, but I mean, I was just looking at them the other day when Yoshihashi and Goto had them last night. When Yoshihashi and Goto had them on, you know, in front of them, and they were holding their belts. It's like there's a fist and a gun like that, and I'm like, man, it just dawned on me. Let's talk about the King of Pro Wrestling match, where the King of Pro Wrestling is now the King of Pro Wrestling. Minoru Suzuki defeated Chase Owens, Toru Yano, and Shima, who not only finagled his way into two nights, a double payday for him at Wrestle Kingdom, but brought his boys with him tonight.
Yes, he did.
God damn, yes, you gotta love it. You gotta love it. Representing Gleet all the way in. Everyone starts stomping on Yano to begin with. They punk Owens out as well. So then you get Shima and Minoru Suzuki alone, which is something I think everyone was excited to see. Shima does a suicide dive. Chase Owens has a good moment where he tries to strike Minoru Suzuki. Suzuki's like, bring it.
It's like hitting someone with a piece of paper. He just didn't move at all.
Well, and I think Chase sort of pulled back a little bit. Like the moment was fun because Suzuki was like, okay. And then Suzuki just like forearms him and Chase drops, right? So there's an Indian death lock that Shima locks into our boy Toru Yano. And then Chase Owens comes after him. Shima grabs him and suplexes Owens as he's holding the deathlock. So he's torquing on Yano's legs while doing the deathlock. And then, which was pretty cool. And then Suzuki and Shima have a strike exchange while the deathlock is locked in. So there's more pressure, more torque put on there. And it all comes to a head when Chase Owens, when Minoru Suzuki locks in a sleeper hold on Shima, and then Chase Owens locks his own sleeper on Suzuki, so we have a chain of finishers there until it all just breaks apart. That was fun.
And the best part of it was Yano screaming to Shima, "Stop falling down! Stop falling down!" It was so good.
Shima air raid crashes. Owens gets his meteor in. Yano low blows Suzuki while the referee is distracted, and Shima at the same time, because again they were in the sleeper holds abounded in this match. Eventually, it's Suzuki who gets the win with the Gotch style on Yano. And after the match, Yano avoids a further beatdown by Suzuki by handcuffing him to the top rope, I think officially welcoming Minoru Suzuki into the wild, wild world of the King of Pro Wrestling matches. What'd you think of all of it?
I thought this match was a hell of a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I'm not entirely sold on the King of Pro Wrestling stuff. I think it got old very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But with Suzuki as the provisional champion now, I think we're going to get some brutal matches. I think he's going to just use this this accolade to absolutely beat the living snot out of a lot of people. And now I'm more invested in the trophy than ever.
Well, I think I saw him doing his post-match comments saying, you know, oh, well, what, you just wait till I bring the rules, right? Mm-hmm. You striking, like, MMA style, you know, like, yes, he can definitely bring another level to this. I don't think it'll be like, you know, a blindfold match or, you know, stuff like that, no. Which is kind of tired. This was fine. It was just entertaining enough, you know, just enough silliness, good stuff. I enjoyed it. So this is where we're at the card so far, right? As opposed to yesterday, where you're like, you get, hey, a fun pre-show, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, hello, AJ Jr. Nice to see you. We get a fun pre-show. We get a cool junior tag team match to begin with. The Stardom match is fun. King of Pro Wrestling match is fun. So I guess it's time for Dick Togo to come in and suck the energy out of the room. House of Torture came to defend their never open weight six man tag team championships. Evil, Yujiro, and Sho against the Chaos trio of Hiroki Goto, Yoshihashi, and Yo. I mean, look, it wasn't as bad as the Ishii Evil matches yesterday, but we did get some wrestling. There was a story happening here, but you know the pads came off early on the turnbuckles, right? there was, like I said, some good stuff. You know, where Sho and Yo had a good exchange again. Mm-hmm. I find
the best exchange that they had all event for me.
I thought it was
that little couple of minutes that they were against each other was superb.
Sho was running the ropes like he was running from a volcano. Did you notice how fast he was hitting the ropes? It was insane. I was like, someone's going to hurt themselves for real, you know?
He realizes he needs to stand out in this stupid House of Torture faction to get out of there.
But the nonsense is there. The spanner is there. Dick Togo has the garrote that he uses. And ultimately, Sho uses the spanner on Yo's head, and that's that. I mean, they retain. It is what it is, but... And seriously, a bit of a balloon buster, right? Where maybe it didn't bust it, but it lets some air out of the balloon right up until this point, where you're like, ugh.
I mean, we as wrestling fans don't deserve a near perfect Sho, so we need a come down, we need a piss break match, and this was that match. The only thing that I really enjoyed in this match was the way that Yoshihashi has actually grown some cojones. He was giving people a lot of grief at the end of that match when they were setting up for the rematch, which I'm not particularly interested in watching. But seeing Yoshihashi fire into Evil and Takahashi, that was fun. Where did that come from?
I'm a lower card chaos team versus House of Torture is not the faction war I'm exactly excited about. I'll tell you one thing though. Shout out to Tomohiro Ishii, who decided to come to the ring with his buddies to serve as an enforcer because he was useful, whereas he easily could have been like, where the fuck were you guys last night? Fuck you guys. I'm staying backstage. Shout out to him.
He's a team player.
A hell of a team player. He got swarmed last night. Lost his title. Where the fuck was Yo? No, Yo did try. Where was Yoshihashi?
The numbers were just too much.
Yoshihashi was too busy eating a bento box at catering.
He apparently gets lost a lot, so maybe he got lost.
I'm assuming they have bento boxes at their catering, as opposed to little sandwiches or rice balls and stuff like that.
Wow, I mean, they may just get McDonald's.
They could also just get you're right. They could get KFC or something like that.
20 nuggets and some barbecue sauce.
But you'd think that they'd have something a little more, local. Well, look, it's not as if, I've done catering at shows, here in Canada before, and we don't have, baby back bacon and, and maple syrup. So what am I talking about,
It's all poutine. Just all day, every day.
Yeah. To say hello to Hayden Burns, Jonas Tiger, and the Certified Wrestling Podcast. Good to see everyone. Welcome hello, to the chat. after this match happened, and just before heading to intermission, there's a bunch of weirdos who showed up.
Yeah, who were these dudes?
All in track suits.
I thought they got a new set of young lions in.
50 of them coming in at once. No. The NOAH people showed up for the big crossover event this weekend, the New Japan NOAH show. Mm-hmm. So you've got everyone. It feels like the whole roster was there. I can't say I'm super familiar top to bottom with everyone who was there, but the faces that were there, I recognize Nakajima. I recognize Go Shiozaki. I saw, of course, Kenno did most of the talking during the match. And I was wondering, when was the last time the Great Muta was in a New Japan ring?
Apparently, was it? Did they say 2003?
2003, right?
Yeah. And he was there taking photos as well, so you could tell it really meant a lot to him.
It really did, and good for him. Good for him for being there as well. Kenno basically cuts a promo on how New Japan sucks and Noah rules. And I was there for it. It was good. He basically said, you know, saying, look at how empty the arena is. Noah's going to help put butts in the seats, you know, something to that effect. And this is what I kind of found funny, though. It drags out L.I.J., right? The Shingo, Hiromu, and Bushi, because the other dudes are warming up for their match. And they come out, and Shingo sort of talks shit. And Kenno's like, well, let's settle this. Let's fight. Let's get this out of the way. And Shingo jumps up on the apron. There's like 50 dudes.
I'd still back Shingo to win that fight.
Shingo sort of goes, yeah, you know what? Forget it. And I mean, I appreciate a smart baby face. Don't get me wrong. You know, like, if this was like 2019, 2019 Seth Rollins, he would have taken everyone on, you know, because Seth Rollins is a big dopey baby face, right? But Shingo's like, nah, I can't do this. And I'm like, Kenno, what were you expecting? But then it got me thinking, where was the rest of the goddamn roster, the rest of the New Japan roster, right?
I mean, they saw Shingo going out and thought, they don't need us. We'd be overkill. We'll go back and get our bento boxes and rice bowls. Shingo's got this.
I appreciated the segment, and I'm glad it didn't go overboard. I'm glad it didn't go further than it did. I think it was absolutely fine. But there is something strange about, you know, an invasion of sorts. It's not like it's two or three guys. It looked like the entire Noah roster was there. You could at least have come with bring the dads, right? Bring the rest of Bullet Club. That's not, maybe not Bullet Club. Bullet Club doesn't care. But, you know, like, you know, bring the under guys. Bring some young lions. Feed some young lions to them. You know, that wouldn't have been that big a deal. Look, it was a fun little segment.
It's what the WCW invasion should have been.
To a degree, right? I mean, you know. But that was fun. I enjoyed it. Sets the stage for this Saturday, which, by the way, I will be doing a post show. I will be watching it this Saturday and doing a post show immediately after with Kevin McElvanny, editor-in-chief of Pro Wrestling Illustrated. So you guys should pop back in so we can talk about that some more.
Yes, I certainly will.
As we're talking in the chat, they should have sent Hook. If Hook had been on the New Japan roster...
That's too far. Hook and Takagi would have just laid waste to all.
You don't even need Shingo at this point. You send Hook in. He no-sells everything, right? Anyway. So you send him in. He no-sells everything. Let him do a couple of suplexes and we're good.
Yeah. Done.
We also got some event notifications as well. The New Japan Cup is going to be starting on March 2nd. So that's really exciting. And Wrestling Dontaku this year is going to be held at the Dome. New Japan going back there. Bit of a historic place for New Japan as well. I loved the old footage of Hulk Hogan, that legendary lariat that he took from
that prized IWGP heavyweight champion, Hulk Hogan.
Was he ever champion?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Thank God.
I don't think he's ever been Look, Bob Sapp was IWGP heavyweight champion.
He was, yes. Brock Lesnar was.
Who's worse?
That is true.
Bob Sapp or Hulk Hogan?
Infinitely worse. Bob Sapp is infinitely worse. But the event that I actually was more excited about that they announced was the return of Takatachi Mania. Yeah, I mean, you may mock, sir, but they are fun shows. They are fun shows to watch.
Well, there you go.
Not that Warren's going to watch it.
can't hardly wait. Oh, and in case you missed the announcement the night before, New Japan is going to be back on Access TV on Thursday nights, counter-programming the Mr. Warren Hayes show immediately after Impact. I know. Impact.
After we're the only people pushing their show and really bringing it to the masses, and they do this.
How many people are doing a post-show of Wrestle Kingdom right now? Right? And this is the thanks I get?
I mean, don't forget, please stick around here. Don't go and check YouTube to see.
No. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm probably, most likely, the only person doing one. Me and Mags are. Of course. Don't go. No. Shut your... Don't open other tabs. Stay focused on us. Oh, boy. By the way, don't forget, if you're watching this right now, whenever, consider giving a like. That would be very much appreciated. We come back from intermission to get Sonata defeating the Great Okan in a pretty fun match. I enjoyed this. Grappling to start with. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. One of my big revelations this year was Great Okan and how versatile he was able to show himself to be. You know, last year at the end of 2020, when he made his debut for New Japan, a lot of people was like, "Oh, he's just another big man. What is this weird ass presentation? Oh, they're putting him in a Wrestle Kingdom match with Hiroshi Tanahashi. What is this bullshit?" Right. And I was a little skeptical, not going to lie. Yeah, I'm always a little skeptical when promotions are like this guy or like this girl. It's like, 2021 was a year where I think he just absolutely came into his own, demonstrated a depth to what he's capable of doing that really did surprise me and genuinely turned me into a fan. I'm a fan of Great Okan now.
Yeah, and he turned the whole big man kind of persona on his head because his whole aim was to be able to wrestle other people's style. I mean, the storyline going into this match was he was going to wrestle Sonata style. He was going to take him on in that handsome style, as he put it. So yeah, I am exactly like you. I didn't get the character. I thought it was just another typical big man, but he has grown on me. I really enjoy watching him.
And that's pretty much what he did in this match. I mean, he pulled out his own his own hits as well. Hits a gourd buster. He did the Mongolian chops, which were blocked. He and Sonata had an exchange, you know, because Sonata was like, "Yeah, you're gonna wrestle my style. I'm gonna wrestle yours." Right? It was a little back and forth here. He avoids the paradise lock, and he teased the pescado yesterday, and we did end up getting it.
Nailed it.
He really did. And Sonata's face was sort of like, "Oh shit, he's doing it," kind of thing. It was really good. There's a series of reversals as well. Great Okan, you know, tries to go for an O'Connor roll into the bridge pin that Sonata does. Sonata even goes for it at some point, and he just puts up his hands and blocks him. Like, he's not missing a beat here. Sonata breaks out of a tiger suplex. They start strong styling each other, doing some throat thrusts. Jumping kick by Sonata is answered with a straight right. That just drops him. Great Okan does the Sonata moonsault, but gets Gato clutched by Sonata, who gets the win thanks to that move. I liked the match, but it was just a wee sloppy. Like, there was a couple of moments where it's like, you know, like there was a moment where Sonata did a moonsault where clearly Great Okan was supposed to catch him, and he kind of, and I'm not saying it's an easy feat to catch a 220 plus pound man flying through the air. Not an easy thing to do, but you know, there were instances where it wasn't like, it wasn't great, you know?
No, you're right. It wasn't the best match on the card. It was perfectly fine. It was entertaining. For me, weird booking. I don't think the win really does anything for Sonata. I think it felt like a booking for an Orkan win would help elevate United Empire, especially when we kind of assumed that Ospreay was going to lose the main event. I thought that maybe the rest of United Empire getting wins would have made sense, but they didn't. They battered 0-3 on this show, which is, I don't get. But I enjoyed the match, but it wasn't both guys' best match by a long stretch.
No, but it was fine. It was entertaining, and you know, it wasn't a terrible match by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, the fact that they did bat, that they were 0-2 heading into the main event, I think it added a level of, Will Ospreay might actually win because his boys lost, yeah. You know?
Well,
it added that level to it. But okay, we'll talk about that match in a little bit. In the meantime, we're going to talk about Naito defeating Jeff Cobb, which up until the main event, was my match of the night. This was right up my alley. I loved it. As soon as Naito takes his gear off, Cobb is all over him. Big strikes between them both. He dumps Cobb to the floor. And while they're on the floor, they fight a bit. Cobb deadlifts Naito into a suplex position, right? But he doesn't quite suplex him yet. He goes and he rams him a couple of times into the ring post before then doing the suplex. Fantastic stuff. Back in the ring, Cobb gets Naito into another suplex position, but instead of dropping him as a suplex, he instead just like, you know what, I'll put him in a gorilla press and then I'll toss him. Now, Jeff Cobb, we know, is a big, strong guy. And I love the fact that he's booked like a big, strong guy, Mags. Mm-hmm. I really do.
I think Jeff Cobb may very well be the best big man in wrestling today. He is what... He does things that even guys like Keith Lee can't do. And Keith Lee is an amazing big man. Jeff Cobb stands alone as the best big man for me. He is so talented and yet so technically skilled. This guy should have all of the belts. All of the belts.
All of them. But he is very, very good, and he's come into his own so much this year. It's absolutely fantastic. And this match has been all Jeff Cobb for a good part of the match. Jeff Cobb is completely in control. Naito finally starts working the knee, which he had been previously working in the Road 2 show. So Naito basically using his brain here to sort of set this up so that he would have an out in this match. Cobb dodges a dropkick from Naito, a dropkick to the knee, and instead just belly-to-belly overhead suplexes. Naito just like, there you go. Naito hits an Esperanza. Cobb avoids a Frankensteiner with a huge powerbomb. A Tour of the Islands is reversed into a calf slicer as well, which was really cool. Cobb beats his way out of a gut-wrench German. There's an enziguri by Naito, but that's answered with a huge lariat by Cobb. But it's a destino, ultimately, that ends the match, Mags. Were you surprised by the result here?
Again, I think it felt like weird booking and kind of burying almost the United Empire. But you made a good point yesterday that kind of changed my outlook about going to the well and bringing back the greatest hits to bring back those fans. And Naito is certainly one of those.
Oh, sure.
Those people who need to be at the forefront of New Japan. But I don't think Cobb loses anything in this match in terms of stature. He was phenomenal. And the whole kind of story we went on from Cobb not even taking the Tranquilo on, not being phased out by Naito's mind games. There's a section in the middle of the match where Naito's essentially doing what Chase Owens did to Minoru Suzuki, trying to clobber Cobb, and he's just absolutely no-selling it. It's such a great story, well told. In the grand scheme of things, the route winner for New Japan, but just felt a little bit weird that the United Empire coming away with absolutely nothing. But yeah, the finally hitting the destino. I think he attempted it maybe 5 or 6 times throughout this match and wasn't able to get it off. But then landed the Valentia, landed the destino. Yeah, this was phenomenal. This match. Absolutely phenomenal.
I really liked it. I thought it was fantastic. I think once again it shows that Jeff Cobb is more than capable of hanging with the top people in the company. Mm-hmm. You know, he's done it with Okada a couple of times in 2021. Here he is with Naito. And yeah, you know, ultimately, well, look, we see what happens. We'll talk about it when we get to it. But yes, you know, clearly New Japan going back to the old standards, pulling out the old playbook, and there's nothing wrong with that after a year which was such a disaster for them. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely okay to go back and play safe and get the draw. It's like, look, it's like we were talking about yesterday, you know, 2021 was not a great year for a bunch of reasons, but COVID particularly hit attendance hard for New Japan. So, you know, you can argue that Shingo wasn't a draw, but who would have been a draw, right? But you can make that argument. Go back to Kazuchika Okada, make him champion, have him hold the belt throughout the... He's a proven draw. He was a draw for 3 years straight. He's the only champion guy people wanted to see. People were ready to pay money just to see that guy wrestle. In Japan and in North America as well, wherever.
Especially when you're going into an anniversary year like the 50th, that's huge. You want as many people in attendance, as many butts in seats as possible. And Okada in a top position, Tanahashi in a top position, Naito in a top position. That's who brings the fans in.
Well, there you go. Why are we saying Hiroshi Tanahashi is in a top position? Ooh. Well. He reclaimed the IWGP United States Heavyweight title from Kenta in the no disqualification match. Now, it was a plunder match, right? Essentially what it was a good old-fashioned plunder match, you know, pulling out the kendo sticks and the garbage pails and the garbage lids and some chairs and you're stacking chairs. Like, you know, Kenta even finds his old IWGP United States briefcase under the ring. You're like, who? Like, even outside of kayfabe, okay? Even outside of the fact of you're wondering who travels with that? Someone kept it. You know what I mean?
Like mothballs. Chris Charlton said it had mothballs.
The thing was mangled. Because Kenta used it so much, it's busted. But why someone was it kept there? It.
Yeah. Whoever set that ring up must have seen that and thought, what is this? This smashed up briefcase doing here? We can't put any parts in it because they'll fall out. Just throw it under the ring and we'll deal with it later.
You can't even... That's it. And then the road crew's like, no one asks any questions. Everyone's just like... Like, I don't... Like, we're less concerned... By Tanahashi finding an acoustic guitar under the ring.
Oh, the tweets about that were glorious. Absolutely glorious. But watching this match actually made me feel a little bit dirty. Because Tanahashi should not be in a match with weapons. He's too pure. He's too innocent. To see him beating somebody up with chairs... And doing the slap nuts, it felt wrong, but also right.
I think the tweets were very funny. But you know, it is very funny to see Tanahashi walking around with a guitar just a few days after Jeff Jarrett decides to he himself come out of the mothballs and hit a wrestling ring to go crack a guitar over Effie's head, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think this was directly influenced by me and you. We started the show yesterday waxing lyrical about Jeff Jarrett.
Oh, there you go.
New Japan have listened. They give us what the people wanted.
Ghetto secret listener of the Mr. Warren Hayes show confirmed. Do you know what I called Hiroshi Tanahashi with the guitar? Did you see what I called him?
I did.
I called him Hiroshi Tana Slapnuts.
It was brilliant. So good.
I just wanted
and
to...
it wasn't even a gimmick guitar. Not like Jeff
No, it
Jarrett,
didn't look like a gimmick guitar. It really didn't.
He full on wailed Kent with that guitar. Jesus, and it barely made a dent. You could have still played that guitar.
Look, there's all sorts of stuff happening. There's stacks of chairs put up there in the ring. Tanahashi goes for the high fly flow on Kenta on the chairs, but Kenta rolls out of the way, so Tanahashi hits it full on. That's the one thing with Tanahashi, right? Is like he doesn't need to be doing this shit anymore at this stage of his career, but he's still doing it, and he's still doing it like full on. He's not like holding back or anything. That was a big, big dive he took. The hesitation drop kick from the corner drop kick, basement drop kick that Kenta does. It stacks some chairs onto Tanahashi, and he didn't hold back there either. He just,
absolutely not.
Just fantastic stuff. Kenta does an avalanche Falcon Arrow through the table.
Through a Japanese table, first
and,
of all.
And I would have been content with that spot. Because at the same time, the way Kenta's legs sort of buckled under the table, mm-hmm. I was like, shit, okay. It could have been a lot worse. And that was a hell of a spot right there. But
yeah, it was. And it, how that didn't break Tanahashi's back is unreal, because the kind of point of the knee was right into Tanahashi's back as he went through that table.
It was nuts.
It was brutal. It was brutal.
Oh, but... Kenta decides that he's going to do some home improvement. And he pulls out the tallest ladder I've ever seen.
He's got a side hustle of painting the roof of the Tokyo Dome.
He pulls out this tremendously tall ladder from under the ring, sets it up. And have you ever seen a ladder get set up like that?
Like I appreciated the fact he did his due diligence and tightened those wing nuts.
But it was more than just tightening the wing nuts. He had to undo them and then make the cross section, the support thing. He had to install it himself. Like someone from the ring crew showed him how to do that. Or maybe Kent is part of the ring crew and we don't know.
That's why the briefcase is there.
It's all coming full circle. So he sets it up, gets a table. And then he lays Hiroshi Tanahashi, who's essentially dead at this point, on top of the table. And he climbs up the ladder. And you're like, this ladder's way too high. This is ridiculous.
Not safe.
It's not safe. So you're like, so Tanahashi rolls off the table and starts to shake the ladder to jostle him off. And we're like, oh, okay. Phew, kind of thing, right? It's like, all right, no one's going through a table. But Kenta does fall off, and he cracks his face on the trash can. You know these aluminum trash cans that everyone is like, oh, look at how soft it is, you know, it mustn't really hurt. Brother just, like, friggin' broke his face.
Yeah, his nose was flattened.
On one of those aluminum... garbage cans, like clearly an accidental bump, but holy shit, it just started to pour.
Yeah, I mean, I watch UFC very regularly, and that was like somebody being smacked in the nose, and it just absolutely exploding. It was a brutal, and to come from a 15-foot ladder to hit that trash can. Square in the face. Jesus Christ. That looked painful.
It was unlucky, but holy shit. Tanahashi climbs up then. No, then he takes Kenta, puts him on a table. Then Tanahashi climbs up on the ladder and does a high fly flow from all the way up there. And the ladder is wobbling and you're like, oh my God. What the, like one of the most stressful spot of the evening. And he just flomp, just crashes on top of Kenta, whose face is already destroyed and is bleeding, gets the pin. Holy shit. That's all I got to say. What a fun one.
That was so good. That was a hardcore match done right. It was amazing. Absolutely. And the callbacks to other hardcore matches with the stacking of the chairs. Yeah, I loved it.
Good progression. Really good progression to lead us to the huge insane spot. You know, starting off with the, you know, all the little plunder stuff, and then it just got worse and worse and worse, like a wrestling match should do, you know?
Yeah. It was a great story. And whilst I would have liked to have seen Kenta carry on with that US title, I know in the prediction show, I put forward the idea of him being the crossover between the Japan and the West. In terms of booking for Japan, Tanahashi as champion makes a perfect sense.
I'm gonna circle back to what I was saying yesterday, that if you're New Japan and you're saying that the U.S. title is our passport into the U.S., that it's the one thing that we want the Americans to gravitate around, the American crowds want to pay to go see New Japan shows if they see the Japanese talent.
Okay.
No disrespect to the Tom Lawlers, to the Chris Dickinsons, to everyone who works the strong show, so on and so forth. But they want to see Okada, Tanahashi, Naito. Those are the people they want to see. It's just as simple as that. So putting the title on Tanahashi to me means it feels like they're ready to, they're going to push a little harder into the U.S. because people will pay to go see Hiroshi Tanahashi wrestle. Much more than Kenta. And again, no disrespect. There's one guy who's a draw. Tanahashi's a draw.
He's the ace of New Japan for a reason.
There you go. I want to say hello to Jason PS3 and Evan Wright, who are in the chat. Nice to see yous.
Hello, guys.
Well, I think that's all we had to talk about. So we're going to wrap it up. Yeah.
Nothing more to see.
One other match happened, but it was so inconsequential.
Well, I must say we called it as well. To be fair, we absolutely called it.
What did we call the conclusion? The result? Yes. You're right. You're right.
But what a match!
Oh God, Kazuchika Okada successfully defended the IWGP World Heavyweight Title against Will Ospreay. In a match of the year candidate straight off the bat, no questions.
Best match of this couple of days by a landslide.
Oh, not even close. It's not even close. The idea here is having two elite world class talent deciding to put on a wrestling match, and this is what you get. And when you tell them, go out there, guys, and tear the house down, that's it. When you have the quality of talent, like a Kazuchika Okada and a Will Ospreay, and you just give them, just say, go for it, make this happen, look at what happens, man.
Absolute gold.
Stunning.
Yeah. And I love the way it started as well with Red Shoes. Red Shoes waving off Will Ospreay's claims that he's the champion. And when he offers the Red Shoes the belt, he's like, nah.
Not this belt.
This is the real belt. This is the real belt. Brilliant. Just a great way to tell a story. And this is a continuation of that kind of big brother, little brother, student and master story that we've seen for the last couple of years. And they really, and I've got to give props again to Chris Charlton and Kevin Keller, really delve into the history between these two, how Okada faced Will 7 years ago in the UK and said, I need him in Chaos, brought him over. Will got too big for his boots, turned on Okada, started his own faction, which led to this. And it was, if you watch one match over the next week or so, make it this match.
This is
glorious. It was everything.
This is something that you make time for. You open up your calendar and you reserve 45 minutes or so. It was even shorter than that. It was under 40 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. This is absolute must watch, and I don't care on what side of the wrestling fence you fall on. If this is something that, as a wrestling fan, you will enjoy. And this match, the pace of this match, I think, is the biggest selling point of it, because you didn't get a 15-minute feeling out period. You weren't like, oh, these guys are going to go long. They gave you the impression, both of them, that they wanted to end this match quickly. So we were into the power moves early on, you know, back body drops, forearms to the back, a neck breaker. We're not doing grappling. We're not doing collar and elbow lockups. You know, it's like, no, we're just going straight in, hitting each other, hanging DDT. Osprey hit that early on as well. Hits a flying forearm that sends everyone to the floor. Even Osprey's hitting a spinning sidewalk slam on top of that.
That was beautiful.
It was just great stuff. Okada hits the flapjack, package neck breaker. He John Woo's Osprey on the apron, which was really cool. And Osprey rams into the post. Everyone falls onto the floor. He kicks Osprey over the guardrail. He's setting it up for, he being Okada, of course, setting up Osprey for the spot that he did the night before on Shingo, the crossbody over the guardrail. But Osprey was ready for him, gives him a good old-fashioned thrust kick into the abdomen. And I'm like, cool stuff. But no, Will Ospreay's like, I'm going to double down on this. Starts climbing up the rigging. And he climbs a little more.
Ibushi-esque. Yeah. Very Ibushi-esque.
And he climbs a little more, and he climbs a little more. I'm like, what are you doing? And he fucking moonsaults off of it.
There's a ladder under the ring. Use the goddamn ladder.
Osprey's like, I can't put that shit together. I'm not part of the ring crew.
I don't know how to work with nuts.
He moonsaults off of the rigging. That was a hell of a bump. Mm-hmm. Get back into the ring.
But not even bumper than that.
No, we're not even there yet. But there's a sit-out powerbomb by Ospreay back in the ring, an enziguri. Okada falls back out to the floor, and Ospreay is like, here we go for a Suzuki special.
Yes.
And he jumps over, and we saw a man counter a Suzuki special with a tombstone pile driver, Mags.
It was.
I don't even understand it.
Good. It was jaw-droppingly good.
I don't even understand. Like, it comes out of my mouth, and I don't understand it.
Yeah, physically, that should be impossible. And just the momentum should have stopped that from happening.
It should have not. It would have. Look, it would have killed me. I'd be dead.
I mean, I don't think I could have done the Suzuki special over the top rope. To be fair,
I don't even. I'm talking catching the dude.
Yeah, definitely. And to land it, stall, hit the pile driver, and then just collapse in a heap, because that was spot of the week. It was brilliant.
And everything we just talked about here, all these wonderful things that happened, you know, all these notes that I have here, this all happened within the first 15 minutes of the match, Max.
Yeah. And that wasn't even the fast pace, because once they got back in the ring, they dialed it up. They absolutely dialed it up.
There's sequences I wasn't even able to properly jot down because everything was going too fast. We get a standing shooting star press, but Okada lifts the knees. It's followed by Okada flipping him into the ropes. He goes for the drop kick because it's Kazuchika Okada, but Ospreay sees it coming. So he grabs him mid-air. For a Liger bomb. Jesus fucking Christ.
Just glorious. absolutely glorious.
He goes for an Os Cutter, he being Will Ospreay, and it lands. Okada avoids a hidden blade, reverses it into a tombstone, but Ospreay reverses that into a tombstone of his own, and that lands. Okada hits a Stormbreaker.
The Rainmaker Stormbreaker. It was, and that's again, he's after Ospreay has mocked Okada doing exactly what Shingo did, and that was probably the start of the downfall for Shingo when he did the Rainmaker pose. That's what happened with Ospreay. He did the Rainmaker pose to rub salt in the wounds, and he just pissed off Okada.
Don't taunt because it's Okada. But then Okada goes for a Rainmaker, and it's reversed into a standing Spanish fly. Ridiculous. And at this point, I'm like, I don't understand anything what's going on anymore. Everything that I think I understand about physics is wrong.
Yeah, this is wrestling on the moon.
Pretty much. They move into this series where they're hitting a whole bunch of reversals on each other. Okada hits a Rainmaker, covers, but Ospreay kicks out. And I swear at this point, I'm like, it's okay, we're done. Ospreay's winning. I was completely in on it. Because you know what happens then? Then Okada locks in the money clip. And if there's
back
any,
to the well.
And I'm no. I'm at this point. I'm like, this is wrong, because Rainmaker Okada does not need the money clip. Mm-hmm. Money clip is the New Japan Cup Kazuchika Okada, who didn't give a shit, who wasn't putting the effort in, and not our world champion, not the guy who is in control, who's the top of the company. The money clip is his. He's like, oh, well, I'll try this.
Yeah, and he spent the last 6 to 9 months of transitioning out of using the money
exactly.
clip into Rainmaker. So it was almost like he'd hit Will with everything but the kitchen sink and had to go to the money clip.
And he was like, this is all I got left kind of thing.
How do I beat this guy?
And to me, that was like, this is all I got left. And I was like, oh, shit. So they got me on this.
But the issue is that we hadn't seen Will hit Stormbreaker. We hadn't seen him hit Hidden Blade. So Will still had those tools in his arsenal. And Okada had used pretty much everything he had to put Will down. So I thought that the screw was on. I thought I was going to have to agree with Matt Sell, the franchise, and say that... Will would be the undisputed IWGP champion, and I didn't want to do that.
Well, as we moved along, Will Ospreay hits a Rainmaker of his own, and the guys are spent, they're done, they're exhausted, but then they start striking each other. They just keep at it. Nothing can keep them down. Okada eats a pop-up forearm. And a hidden blade gets covered, but he kicks out. Mm-hmm. There's a sling. Ospreay goes for a sling blade, right? Or at least I think that's what he tries to do. I don't quite remember. My notes are a little iffy.
So if I remember it, after he got the two count. He tried the Kawada kicks,
mm-hmm.
Then went for the Stormbreaker, which he wasn't able to pull.
That's
off.
Right. Yep.
Gets hit with an uppercut, if I remember rightly. Goes for the Stormbreaker again, and I'm sure there's a point where he lands a V trigger.
Yeah, he does
on Okada, which mm-hmm. that was just stunning. Goes for the Hidden Blade a second time, which is countered with the drop kick.
And exactly what happened to Shingo last night. He runs into the drop kick, gets the landslide,
mm-hmm.
and the Rainmaker, and that was it. Ending an absolutely phenomenal wrestling match. One of these reasons why you love wrestling so much.
Yep, 5 days into the year of our Lord 2022, and you will struggle to find a better match all year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This one is This one will absolutely be on lists. There's no question about it. And what made this match work is, of course, all the history, the storytelling that always adds in more and more every time as Ospreay continues to try and get one over on Okada, tries to put him away for the big match. That's his thing. That's what he wants. That's what he keeps trying to do. He's the nemesis at this point. This is
the kryptonite.
Yeah, exactly. And Okada coming full circle on the story that they started in 2020 when Okada was mailing it in, wasn't quite there. You're like, you remember that. I'm sure you remember the discussions that people were having last year. It's like, oh, is Okada finished?
Yeah.
He can't go anymore. And I was convinced. I was like, he's just not putting why would we be seeing him on his best when there's nothing to motivate him to be at his best?
There's no crowds.
There's no crowds. He's not in the title picture.
There's no one to entertain. Yeah, there's not in the title picture. He was floating essentially in limbo. Yeah, he had no reason to kill himself for essentially nothing. Where this Okada is the 2017 to 2019 world champion Okada, and he's firmly established himself again as the best wrestler in the world.
And it started last year, entered 2020, it started in 2020, and then throughout last year, you could start to see, starting to screw less around with the money clip. But then his whole story of the G1 was the return of the Rainmaker. That's essentially what it was. Rainmaker's making a comeback. He's devouring everyone in the in his block. Jeff Cobb doing the same parallel. He becomes the final boss of the G1 for Okada. And he does it. And then we get to Wrestle Kingdom. Defeats Shingo in a great match. Don't get me wrong. It's just the match that he had tonight with Shingo was just, and with Will Ospreay was completely out of this world.
Yeah, I mean, two of the best matches that you'll see, but this one far eclipsed the match from yesterday, and I absolutely adored the match from yesterday.
Oh, me too.
Two matches in a row, Okada has not only brought it, but excelled. It's just phenomenal wrestling.
So, final thoughts on Wrestle Kingdom nights 1 and 2, Magsy. If you had to wrap it up in a couple of sentences, what would you say about it?
Watch the very end of night one and the majority of night two. I thought I'm still not convinced that it's two nights were there. I think that this could have been compressed into one super show, but it was glorious. This was a return to the wrestling that I fell back in love with. It was amazing, and I'm so glad not only to have been able to watch it, but also to kind of share my thoughts and viewpoints with you and the lovely people of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show.
Well, thank you very much, but I think it's as an event, I think it's a very uneven event. Mm-hmm. I think night one is entirely skippable outside of the main event. There's nothing really significant outside of that happened. The junior match was good too. El Desperado and Hiromu had a hell of a match themselves. So, last bit of night one is very good, but night one in about itself is, it wasn't a good show. It wasn't something that we sat here and were really enthusiastic about, but we come over to night two, and even outside of the extraordinary main event, this lightning in a bottle that we were privileged enough to see, the show was fun. It was a fun show to watch from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm. Aside from the one match.
Well, of course.
But you need that match to kind of a palate cleanse.
No, don't start saying that we need Dick Togo. We don't. Stop this. We don't.
But yeah, Nat 2 is infinitely better than Nat 1. Definitely go and check it out if you haven't already. This is everything that's good about wrestling.
And these post shows are everything that's good about podcasting with Lord Mags. I appreciate it so much, man. I can't thank you enough for coming on both of these post shows to chat with me. And we even did the pre-show together. Mm-hmm. One last time, let everyone know where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, it's been an absolute blast. And thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to chat New Japan. We clearly don't do it enough.
No.
As a community, and we definitely need to change that. You can follow me on Twitter at PodfatherMags. And I'm not actually going to push one of my shows today. I'm actually going to give props. I'm going to shill for Bell to Bells. Because yesterday, Bell to Bells released the first 100 of their first Bell to Bells Women's 500. Some amazing names on there. And today, we'll see the second 100 of them. The work that Warren, Kristen, and all the team over at Bell to Bells do, especially on the day where we've seen history with a stardom match on a Wrestle Kingdom main show. Definitely go and give the team at Bell to Bells their props. They absolutely deserve it. And go and check out their Women's 500, because they are doing what's best for women's wrestling. And yeah, and we all should appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Magsy. That's very kind of you. Yeah, absolutely. Do check out the rest of the 500. We're going to release over the next couple of days all the list, and we're very excited about it. Very, very happy about how it came out. So thank you. Thank you very much, Mags. I appreciate it. And thank you so much again for joining me. And thank you, everyone, for joining me as well. Don't forget, we got one more post show coming up on Saturday. As I mentioned earlier, the New Japan NOAH crossover show. I will be back immediately after the show. We'll be joined by Kevin McElvany of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the editor-in-chief, who's going to be joining me, so that's exciting. And there's going to be a Mr. Warren Hayes show tomorrow night, Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes is where all of this is going to go down. In the meantime, thank you everyone so much for joining us this morning, this afternoon, today. See you next time.